Episode 70 of Welcome to Level 7, The Writing on the Wall.
Welcome to Level 7. A podcast about Marvel's Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. and the Marvel Cinematic Universe. It's a magical place.
Welcome, everyone, to the podcast about Marvel's Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. and the Marvel Cinematic Universe, the only one that features a guy named Daniel and a guy named Ben. I'm the guy named Ben.
I'm the guy named Daniel.
There he is. How you doing, Daniel?
I am so excited. Who would have expected that a little Marvel Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. podcast could have gotten to 170 episodes?
Okay, that's not funny.
It is to me.
Okay. I can laugh at myself. Ha 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 ha. Ha. I added 100. Ha ha ha. I am going to promote a episode on my other podcast that we did get past 100 to.
Oh.
Yeah. But we'll do that later.
At Ultraverse.
Ha, 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 ha. See, I'm laughing at myself. Ha, ha, ha.
It's all right, buddy. I need a little pickup. I'm the guy who left an entire conference call of over 40 people with 16 minutes of my hold music today. So we all make mistakes.
We do. It's true. Okay, Daniel. Let's move on then.
Hey, by the way, that's a secret, everybody. It's a secret. Don't tell.
I don't think you have to worry. We are all discreet. We are all spy. It's spy stuff, right?
Exactly. Though it would be interesting if somebody at work came up to me and said, hey, heard about that. I'd be like, oh, so you listened to the show.
Yeah, that'd be cool, actually.
It would be cool.
So, all right, let's get started. We have a lot to talk about, and I want to get moving, so... Let's move on to our news, shall we?
Let's do it.
S.H.I.E.L.D. Intelligence Report.
Ah, the Intelligence Report. Ben, I don't know if you've noticed, but after those big announcements for that big movie slate, there's just not been a lot of news.
I have noticed. It's been kind of nice. I mean, there's been little things here and there about, like, Fantastic Four.
When is Doctor Doom not Doctor Doom?
That's just trivial. Trivial matters. It holds no weight with me. I will go and see the movie. I will go and see it opening night. And then I will, at that moment only, will I judge it as the failure that it is and that it will be.
There you go.
There we
go. As expected to be.
No, I honestly think Fantastic Four, because of what the hole they've dug themselves into, they could very, very easily surprise a whole lot of people.
I think we're just at the
point
of say Fantastic Four as inspired by Marvel's Fantastic Four.
It'd be really funny if the movie starts and there's actually like six people.
Oh, jeez.
Wouldn't it?
Math is hard, buddy. Math is hard. Speaking of math.
And speaking of six.
We had to look hard for news, but we found some Marvel movie news.
Okay.
Which is.
Because there wasn't anything really. But, okay, go ahead. Go ahead.
Are you ready? Big Hero 6 was number one at the box office last week.
That's news?
$6 million. Beating out Interstellar. So the Batman family.
That's goes news? Down.
Dude, it's news.
That's not news.
It is news. I mean, it's a narrow race. $56 million to whatever the heck Interstellar had.
What did Interstellar have?
I don't know. I can't find it in the news story that I'm looking at. Not as much. But the thing is that's a big, 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 huge budget movie with a big director and a movie star that is in confusing car commercials. So, I mean, that thing had everything going for it. Big Hero 6, I mean, nobody knows who Big Hero 6 is. All they had was Disney.
Daniel, I think you're inflating this news a little bit.
This is huge.
Interstellar is a 3-hour sci-fi movie.
Yeah, so was Transformers.
Yeah, yeah. Interstellar was a 3-hour sci-fi movie that nobody knew what it was about, and it looks like it was just about a spaceship and corn from the trailers.
Yeah, that's why I haven't gone to see it.
Exactly. But have you gone to see Big Hero 6?
Opening weekend, man. I'm okay.
And who did you take with you?
I took the entire family.
Yes. Interstellar, 3-hour sci-fi movie. Let's look at my viewing habits here. I went and saw both this weekend.
Did you see it with the couple?
Interstellar? No. Yeah. No.
Did you see Big Hero 6 with the couple?
I saw Big Hero 6 with 4 of my kids.
Oh.
Yeah.
Well, you've got a lot to explain about that couple.
Well, here's the thing, man. I mean, Big Hero 6, who's going? Families. Interstellar, who's going? Diehard nerdy people who are like, oh, Christopher Nolan doing 2001. And by the way, it references 2001 a lot.
Like straight out?
Oh, yeah.
Like hung a lampshade on it?
Yes. It like really did.
Okay, okay.
Oh,
very nice.
Like it references the monolith and HAL at the same time. And
but
I'm not going to give
Machine
away.
Machine Man.
Well, strictly speaking, you could make the case, but I won't. Because it doesn't. But
you know, though, you know, Interstellar should be proud. Because Interstellar got $50 million, okay? Big Hero 6 got $56.2 million. Fourth time in history that two films have debuted at $50 million at the box office at the same time.
Actually, Interstellar, I'm surprised by that. I'm very surprised by that. That it was that close. Because it is a 3-hour movie, meaning not quite 3 hours. But they can show two showings of Big Hero 6 in the time that they can show one of Interstellar. Those numbers do surprise me. That surprises me.
I'm telling you, Interstellar's a big deal.
I guess so.
It wasn't a slam dunk.
No, I wasn't expecting it to be a slam dunk. Oh, you mean
that it was going to be that way.
Big Hero 6 is... I'm surprised that it didn't do better. Compared to Interstellar, I mean.
Until I bought my tickets, which was Thursday, before I saw it for a Saturday show. Before I got the tickets, I thought to myself, Interstellar's going to win this weekend.
Are you serious?
Now, when I went to buy my tickets, because with my theater, I have to pre-pick my seats. And I saw that I couldn't get any seats that I wanted on Saturday at all, and I had to wait till Sunday. Then I said to myself, okay, they're going to win the weekend.
Are you serious? It took you – well, dude, obviously – no, obviously the box office bears you out.
I've lived through Bolt. I've lived through Bolt, man.
Bolt, Bolt no one cares about.
That's what I'm saying.
Wow.
You can say Interstellar is the movie that nobody knows what it's about. Big Hero 6 is an animated feature that many people did not know about.
No. It was everywhere.
But it's not like they were. I disagree. I don't think it was – they had hung a lampshade on this at all.
It was everywhere.
And I will say this. One member of this family did not want to go.
Well
– not at all.
That's understandable, but I'll say this. Every member of my family wanted to go, and they saw the trailer once. So I'm just saying, Daniel, I'm just saying this is a movie. Big Hero 6 is a movie that I'm shocked that it was this close. You obviously knew better than I did, especially after seeing both of them. Big Hero 6, fun family movie. Well, what are we talking about? We'll talk about that later.
Talk about that, you know?
Yeah. Okay. Post credits. After we are done talking about the episode and we're done talking about the listener feedback, then we'll talk about Big Hero 6. But for now, that's the news. Let's move on. Let's talk about the writing on the wall.
Mission report.
Mission report.
All right, Daniel, how do you want to do the plot?
Oh, jeez. I don't know.
There's just a lot going on here. Let's scale it down.
I've doubled my amount of notes because it's not just what's going on with the plot. There's information aplenty.
Okay, so here's what I'm going to suggest then, Daniel. There's two plots here. There's two storylines.
It's like a tale of two cities.
Almost, except only one city really gets referenced. But we'll do one and then the other, and we'll do the easy one first, and then we'll go into the one that has all the crazy, crazy, crazy town stuff.
Easy first, so Coulson.
Yeah, I knew you were going to say that, but no. Not Coulson. Let's talk about the Ward plot line. It's pretty simple, right? You have Ward. He's on the run. He's going to his drop boxes or whatever, where he has cell phones and identity and all the things he needs, cash, bombs. And he knows he's being tailed, and he knows that Triplett is tailing him. So, hey, Triplett actually got to do something. He got to watch Ward in a bus station and see a bomb.
He got to watch Ward in a bus station.
And see a bomb.
He got to sit next to May while May flew.
Flew, yeah.
He got to get his gun ready to walk into a bar.
Yes.
That is action-packed.
I felt bad for him. You know, I could just imagine him getting that script and be like, how am I going to get through all of this physical stuff, you know? Are they going to use body doubles for most of this?
Like, he's Jed, excuse me, I stand.
Marissa, are you really making me do this? Because no human should be put through this. Are you going to have some sort of CGI character of me that's going to be able to take care of the heavy lifting here? Because when I'm watching Ward and seeing a bomb, that's eye acting.
Wait. Clark does all that himself.
He stands and watches things.
But he's on the bus and sometimes he's in an office.
But you know, you remember that scene early on when Coulson and Triplett were standing next to each other in an earlier episode? I mean, that's where you could just see him just taking notes. Okay, Clark Gregg does it like this. I can do this. If Clark Gregg can do it, I can do it.
So. Look sincere.
Okay. Were you excited? I was excited. I saw Triplett actually following Ward, and
I was excited that
he was off the bus. He was out of the playground.
I'm a huge fan of Trip. I really am. I want to know more about Trip. And we've almost kind of, with Trip, with season two, fallen into the trap that we fell in with Fitzsimmons in season one. Where at a certain point, they were just there, but we weren't really finding out anything about them. So if we go back to some of those episodes from season one, we'll probably make a comment about Fitzsimmons, like, they were there. And that's the way it's kind of felt with Trip, where I felt like last year we were getting a lot about Trip. Because he was Garrett's boy, his guy. He was a legacy. He was necessary. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Now, let's be fair to Trip, though. The other guy who could – I look at our cast and I see two people that Trip could be doing their job, and that's Mac and that's Hunter. So to be fair
– No, I disagree. Hunter didn't do very I don't think Mac and Trip really have the same role because I get the sense that Mac is much more mechanical in nature.
Okay. You're talking about function though. I'm talking about – character moments that Triplett could be a part of.
But I think that's important because what is the character moments that Triplett needs to be used in and was used in before? He's in the action. He's the team. I'll use the language you understand. He's on the away missions. But Mac stays on the Enterprise because really when you think about it, Mac doesn't go on missions.
Neither does Triplett, except for today.
But he
should.
This
is what I'm saying, Daniel. They finally get Triplett out on the field, and what happens? There's action in the playground that Triplett could have been the guy holding Coulson down.
Well, that would
Triplett could have been the guy they're talking to about what are we going to do with Coulson? We're going to do that? No, you got to get him out of there. No, they gave that to Mac.
No, you couldn't have done it with Triplett, because a lot of what's going on with Mac's dialogue has to do with not understanding what's occurring. And Triplett would have already known all this. And Triplett understands part of Coulson's arc that Mac doesn't.
Okay.
Mac is completely in the dark.
Daniel, if you have Triplett in the scene, you write new dialogue for him, different dialogue for him. I'm not talking about giving him Mac's dialogue. Giving him Mac's action.
But we're not in that part of the story. And Mac's dialogue needs to be combined with Mac's action, because there's some interesting things that are going on with Mac that are Coulson directed, which I don't think
there could be interesting things that are Triplett and Coulson directed. I'm just saying, I would be happy if Mac was.
No, you can't do the same thing.
Yes. You can't. No, Daniel. No, please listen. Please. Wait. Stop. Wait.
I'm taking off my headphones. I'm a hot mess.
Take Mac out of the show. We don't even know they were thinking about putting him there. We won't miss him, because Triplett is there saying the things, doing the things, and helping out with Fitz. And Triplett is there, giving his own take on what's happening with Coulson. And instead, we've crowded Triplett out. And you're saying you love Triplett so much, but whenever I suggest that here's a way that we could shoehorn him in more, everything I'm suggesting about that, you're like, no, it couldn't happen that way. I'm saying this because, I love Triplett. I want to see more of him. And here are some suggestions that if I was doing it, which I'm not, but this is armchair quarterbacking. That's what we do. If I was doing it, this is how I would give Triplett his chance to shine. It's like you're saying, I like Triplett, but I don't want to see him.
The whole point of Mac in that set of scenes, which isn't even the storyline we're talking about, has to do with the fact that he doesn't know all the backstory, and he doesn't have the trust in Coulson that others do. Triplett has that trust. You can't have him questioning Coulson's craziness and have it have the same impact.
Right, because he's got a relationship with Coulson.
If we go back to the story that we are talking about, we have the perfect opening for Trip. We kill Hunter.
He's the other guy. Hunter is the other guy that I'm saying.
Lance Hunter has to go.
Yeah.
And he has to go.
No, he's the other one. He's the other one that it Trip again, crowding out Triplett. Yeah. Crowding him out.
Other than being able plot wise to be the guy that Ward doesn't know, so he can kind of sit behind him with a cowboy hat, you could have cut that out and done a different way to track Ward.
Oh, yeah.
And
Mockingbird, you put her there. Yeah,
you could have very easily slipped Trip into that role on that storyline and still had the same impacts.
Yep.
Where you can't do it with Coulson's storyline.
Well,
can't be done.
I'm saying, no, Daniel, I'm saying we've crowded out Triplett. This was a bad choice from the beginning to crowd him out like this. And if they had not given us Mac or not given us Hunter, Triplett could get used more.
And I would just say, function wise, it's Hunter that has to go. Hunter's fine. The issue we're at the moment is he serves one purpose, which is to be a somewhat romantic foil to the myth, the legend of Bobby Morris. And, I don't need that. I don't need the ex-wife jokes, which luckily weren't used tonight. I don't need him to be a foil to her, because every man should be a foil to Mockingbird.
So following our plot here, basically Ward catches on that Triplett's there and shows off the bomb. Ward gets on a bus and he's made Mockingbird. Bobby, he noticed her, and we noticed her as he's walking through the bus station, the terminal. We see a guy in the cowboy hat. And he basically had two people keeping their heads way down and not showing their faces. Obviously, these are our guys. He gets on the bus with Mockingbird, sits next to her, tells her, I figured it out. I'm going to get on another bus. You can't follow me. But it's nice because they've already put Hunter on the other bus. And clever, cute, nice job. And so then they're able to follow him to a bar where he's going to get a drink, and he's offered a what is it? The
Columbia necktie.
And while he's drinking, Bakshi comes in. And Ward drops a name, Daniel.
I know. I caught it too.
Wasn't that cool?
And rewound it just to make sure that I was right.
And the name he dropped?
Strucker.
Strucker's overseas. Someone else must be in charge. And Ward offers Bakshi the chance to get to see Coulson face to face. So our team is closing in on him. And when they come in, what do they find? Everyone in the bar is dead. Basically everyone being the bartender and the people came in with Bakshi. Bakshi has been tied up, left in a closet with duct tape over his mouth that says "For Coulson." And that's pretty much, well, okay, if we're going to continue the Ward story, then in our tag scene, Ward reveal they're going after Bakshi's cell phone data, and Ward calls the phone and talks to Sky because he knows she has that phone. And talks a little bit, and then we see that his target is his brother. Something is going to happen with him and his brother. Well, he's going after his brother for one reason or another.
Some gas.
There's going to be trouble for his brother. Let's put it that way. One way or another. So, oh, he shaved too.
He did, and cut his hair.
He did. A lot less shaggy looking.
I finally feel like maybe I could look like him with that short hair.
So this is a big turning point for Ward's character. And he says it out loud when he says that first he was held in a cage. And before that, he was held behind a badge. And now he's finally free. And he says this as he's getting back in contact with Hydra agents. So I think this is kind of his character turning point where he's, okay, I'm free. I can do whatever I want now. Garrett is gone. Shield is behind me. Hydra is a potential ally in the scene you're thinking it is, and then you see what he does with them. He's off on his own. He's a free agent now. So what do you think he's going to do? Where do you think he's going to go? What is the new normal for Ward now?
I think he's a Corton.
Who's he?
And Corton needs gifts. I think he's still after Sky. I mean, that is his motivation. As you said, he has no allegiance to Garrett anymore. He has no allegiance to Coulson because he never had it. So what is he going to be loyal to? He's not lied to her. He has told her he'll be there very soon. And I think he's right. I think these gifts, you know, they may have Coulson's name on them, but they are to impress Sky. Because as our question asks, are they attempting to redeem Ward? Well, maybe he thinks he can redeem Ward by giving gifts and helping tear down Hydra. He also, by the way, thinks he has an insight on Hydra and the ruthless nature that it will take to bring them down. So he very much might think that he's finally doing the right and good thing by bringing a little evil to the chase against Hydra.
Yeah, I definitely don't get the sense that he feels like he's doing these, giving these gifts, leaving them like dead birds, you know, from a cat on the porch. I definitely don't get the impression that he thinks, oh, this is going to redeem me for Coulson and the team. I think it serves his purpose somehow or another. But I'm curious where they're going with this now, and I'm kind of liking it. Were you afraid that they were going to have him in the cage the entire season?
I think we both were. I think my bigger fear is you knew eventually he'd have to leave the cage. And what I didn't want to see have happen, and I've said this before, is them being like, we got to take Ward, golly gosh.
Yeah.
And then something hijinks ensue. I didn't want that. So again, I think this whole prison break thing is working fine for what needs to happen.
And now he's out and doing his thing. It's just, what is this thing going to be? So I like this. I like this turn. And you know, we've got the team. And one thing we do have is Trip is on the road. They're chasing after Ward, and he's with them. So maybe he'll actually get to do something. I like Hunter. Don't get me wrong. I like him. I just feel a little bitter because he's kind of pushing out Triplet, who we got to know in the last season and haven't really gotten to see much from him this one. So
now, what we really haven't talked about with Ward is, do you think he really would have blown up a bus full of people?
Coulson seemed to think he would.
And
Bobby seemed to think that he would. Because she didn't come after him. But she didn't need to go after him. That was the thing. They were expecting him to lose her. And they were expecting him to get on the other bus. So, yeah, I don't know. That's a good question.
You know what I think would have been hilarious?
What?
If he hadn't got off the bus. And the bus was moving. And we could have cut back and forth between the other story and in this story, Bobby and Ward just talking.
I expected that.
All the way to Dallas.
I totally expected him to sit down, stay sitting down next to him or next to her. And just what you described. That's what I expected.
And at some point she like calls in and is like, this guy's like a bag full of cats. His brain is crazy down.
Or she really hits it off with him. Why are we chasing after him? Oh, I know why I want to chase after him. Because he's, you know, dreamy.
Sky, he's quite the catch.
Sky, if you weren't after him, I would totally.
It's Movember.
He shaved, though.
I know. He totally needed to wait until the beginning of next month.
Yeah.
But, you know, for them, it's fall, right?
That's true.
Like early fall. Maybe it could be summer.
That's true. That's true. Yeah.
It's probably early spring.
By the way, I'm not doing that, Daniel. The Movember thing. I just started a new job and I really can't afford to look stupid. So. And I'm not saying that people who do that look stupid. I'm saying if I did that, I would look stupid.
Well, so, I'm going to be honest with you, buddy.
Be honest with me. That's what I'm here for.
I'm letting the back go wild this month. It's just doing what it wants to do. It's like a timber wolf back there.
You're doing the mullet.
No, my back hair. I mean, I got to be nice, high and tight and, you know, got to keep that shave down. I mean,
gotcha.
The back hair, it's under a shirt, so.
Gotcha. Are you one of those where it's like you take off your sweater and everyone's like, hey, take off your sweater, man.
Yeah, it's like braided back there. The kids love it. Put little beads in it.
Nice. Okay. So what else do we want to say about Ward or Bobby or May? May got angry, but May got angry about the other plot line. So maybe we should wait on her?
I think we should wait on her.
Okay.
I think one last observation is we're seeing the new additions to the team through Ward's eyes. And we're seeing Ward through the new additions' eyes.
Ooh.
And through the new additions, through the Bobby and Hunter, they're impressed with the craft.
Yeah, and this is not, oh, I'm impressed with him in battle. This is – he knows what he's doing because he makes Bobby because he noticed she was looking at page 117 or whatever when she was watching him, and she was still on that same page on the bus.
Yeah, they think he's crazy, but they can respect his level of craft, and it's good, and he's solid.
But he does not respect them,
and that's important. He does not respect them at all. Now he says, you know, I'm kind of tough to replace. Well, no, not really. We have Trip, but
well, yeah. But on the flip side of that is what he actually said about them, and Sky took it as a little bit of a threat. But was it? Was he threatening when he said that?
It sounds thready. It almost sounds like he's like, they need to leave so I can come home. Which isn't going to happen because Coulson made that clear.
Well, here's the other thing. Even if you had a bad, bad, bad breakup with someone, when they get together with someone else, you might hate that person that you broke up with. But you also hate that person and are jealous of that person they get back together with, or they get together with. And you just, I never want to see that person again. I never see that girl again. Why is she with that guy? He's no good. He's not as good as I, you know. And maybe that's the kind of that's the kind of thing that he's doing there. Maybe.
I got to be honest with you, man.
What?
I can't relate anymore. It's been a long time.
Oh, I still can go back to those wonderful, beautiful, quiet days of my youth.
Yeah.
And I would pine romantically for people that had no interest in pining romantically back for me. I'll just say to everyone, don't worry. Don't worry about it. Things work out. They just have a tendency to work out. And I have no idea what I'm talking about now.
Yeah, I don't know what you're talking about either. So,
all right. So should we move on to Coulson, Mac, Fitzsimmons?
Well, there's nothing to say in this story. Nothing to talk about in this storyline.
What do you mean?
This whole Coulson thing.
Oh, good
symbols,
grief.
Maps. I mean, let's just go flashbacks. Just go to the field
weird
report at this
camera
point.
Work.
Yeah. GH. Level 6 agents. Nothing.
All right.
Nothing at all.
Okay. Daniel, I'm going to go through this. I'm going to start talking through this plot. Stop me when you want to, and we'll just kind of take it that way. All right? Just interrupt, stop me, put the brakes on, and I will do as you say. I will obey your whim. Ready?
Go.
A dude and a lady.
Stop.
Okay.
I mean, do we really know that he's a dude or is he just a guy? No, I'm just kidding. Go on.
Okay. So apparently this is the dude who got his tattoo on last week or 2 weeks ago.
As you pointed out, you know, that moved us into our next episode, and it really did.
Yeah. So they come into the apartment, her apartment. They are getting along famously because she feels like she might know him, but just can't remember him. And instantly, I'm starting to feel like I know where this plot is going. Fortunately, in spite of the fact that I felt like I know where things were going, the revelations they were giving as they were going there really kept me intrigued and interested. And so any plot that was going on here that I felt like, oh yeah, this is pretty trope, pretty cliche here, didn't matter because it was good, meaty stuff that was coming to us. Anyway, he takes her down, he's going to carve on her, and because he knows her, she knows him, and we all can figure out by now there's GH involved here, Tahiti's involved here. This is big stuff that we're going to start seeing here just from our opening scene. We cut from the guy getting ready to carve the girl to Coulson carving to Jazz. And Sky confronts him and says, I have to chaperone you.
His orders.
Yeah. And she gives the line, it's all connected. And he says, it wants us to know. I can feel it. And that's an interesting line there. And they come back to that later on. It wants us to know. I can feel it. What's it? Well, we're going to find out a little bit more about the alien guy.
And that it is an interesting thing because they even talk about how it's a puzzle and they have pieces, but they don't know what they're building a puzzle to look like.
Right. And they also say if it's a map, it's a map to nowhere.
And Skye's made it clear. She's checked against biological, physical. She's checked a ton of stuff except the comic books. But she's checked a ton of stuff and she cannot find a match.
And he's been carving every day and every night, and he's not getting his rest. He should be getting 8 solid hours every day.
No, not on a podcast night. When Caning sets up the podcast board, he only sleeps like 5.
Oh, man. Podcast night. Okay. And they talk about May being out
looking
for
work. He loves it, though. He does.
Who, Caning or Coulson?
Both of them. I mean, they feel good about that 5 hours after a good night of podcasting.
We like the podcast night, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. It's tiring, but it's good.
It's my guy time to be honest.
So I didn't look this up, but Sky, this triggered a thought with me. As they are, you know, they're kind of, you know, trying to talk about this stuff. Sky mentions a guy named Micro, a crime scene junkie that she knows through her, you know, internet techie contacts. And he has found a crime scene. And so we see the carving on the woman in the crime scene photos. And so they go to check out the crime scene. They find paintings, and written on the corner of one of the paintings, it says "a magical place." And then also you see the alien writing on the paintings. So she's obviously been touched by this GH thing. And they're just looking now. They're taking these photos, putting them all together, putting it on the floor. So they have print-offs. They have copies of the wall photos from the wall, things from her paintings. You have the writing from the picture that they were dealing with earlier in the season. And they're just trying to figure out what pieces are missing in this picture.
But they're also able to confirm something, which is that her symbols and Coulson's symbols and other symbols that they found, like the painting from the fire, are all connected. They actually are all the same thing.
They overlap.
Yeah.
That's one thing. And she's got some parts that he didn't have. And then, you know, some of the things that they had, they would have to gather so you could, like, you know, it's like putting the puzzle together, but it's the pieces are kind of have a little bit of transparency to them, so you can like slide them over each other and kind of, you know, see how they fit like that. It's cool. It reminded me of X-Files. I don't remember. Do you remember that one episode where there's some kid who was like drawing on pieces of paper and it looked like nothing, and then like you spread out the pieces of paper on the floor and they looked at it from above and it's like a picture of a guy's face or something like that. And it had that feel to me, but it was nice. We are connected. It's not just it's all connected. These GH325 people, these Tahiti patients, they're connected. It's nice. So they need to do an autopsy. How are they going to do an autopsy without a body? Well,
this is awesome.
They just, you know, smash cut, dropping the body right there on the table. And I love this phrase that Fitz uses, corpus diem, seize the dead. I think he's got some things wrong there. Like, isn't diem day?
Day, yeah.
Yeah. So he like switched out the wrong word, but corpus diem, I could see becoming something I say. So they're doing an autopsy. They find GH325 in the blood. And they find GH325 in the blood of her attacker from underneath her nails. And so they need to find out more information. And here is big commercial break scene. Opens the door. There's the torture machine. And he says, to find out the information, you're going to have to torture it out of me.
Dun, dun, dun.
This is bad news, man.
Because we know this machine hurts. A lot.
Yeah. And we're going to find out more about that hurt. This is where we get into the flashback stuff. And this is really, I felt like this was nice. It was artfully created. And it does have some of the, you know, there's a little bit of a cliched feel to it with the fluttering filmography, the double exposed imaging kind of thing where you have person's moving, but as they're moving, their body stays. And so that, you know, you see two images of the person moving, that kind of gives you that uneasy feeling and you feel like you're in a horror movie, that kind of thing. But I really felt like it was artfully done. But the other thing that was artfully done, Coulson, Clark Gregg, the look on his face as they're getting ready to start. He's scared. He has to do this. Saving one life makes it worth the risk.
And not only one life, but he feels responsible.
Absolutely.
He was in charge of this program. So whatever happened to them, he was somewhat the reason why it occurred. And we find out that he was, you know, the reason why some of this occurred. You know, he was the head.
And we get to see him be the head. This is cool.
Yeah. Now, I do have a question about this flashback and how you thought – other than, you know, you thought it was artistically done well.
Mm-hmm.
But story-wise, did you enjoy it? Because I just listened to the interviews that Gotham City Gotham TV podcast had done with the Stars of Gotham and New York Comic Con. And they had made I believe it's in there. I heard the actor who plays Jim Gordon make the comment that he didn't want flashbacks to when he was in the army because flashbacks are clumsy. So how did you feel? Did you feel like it took away from our story to go back?
No, flashbacks can be clumsy and they can be lazy. But this was different. This was showing us and it was revealing to us mystery questions that have been built up since day one. To be quite honest. And so there's build up to this stuff. And it's not just showing us the flashback either. This is showing us his memory. And this is showing us him reliving. And so what was nice is you had three layers of dialogue. As he's talking, you see him on the screen. You see his face as he's in the machine. And you see him in his flashback. And they're sharing the dialogue. And so, yeah, clumsy? I don't think it was clumsy here. I don't think it was lazy here. I feel like we were getting a revelation, and it was plot-driven for him to go back. Yeah, that's what I'm going to go with here, Daniel, why this is not the same kind of thing that he was talking – that your Jim Gordon guy was talking about is because this was Coulson choosing to go back and dig – and this is character-driven stuff here. This is not just, okay, we're going to pull a Lost and show you some things that might give you some revelations that might give you some insight on the present day. This is a character choosing to go back and look back and face pain and face a fearful situation and something that had been erased from his memory for his betterment. So, yeah, I'm going to say no, not clumsy. Did you like this? Did you like this stuff?
Well, I liked it because I think of some of the things like comic book storytelling where you go back and you get these things afterwards. And so it worked for me. I actually don't find flashbacks that clumsy. I actually like flashbacks. I like origin pieces and even like – I really like movies where you get training scenes. I know. I'm kind of weird. So, I mean, there were some big reveals about Guest House, and you got to see Coulson interacting at Guest House. So I actually liked it.
Yeah, I liked this here. Okay, so we get to see six patients, and we get to see him interacting with them and them being grateful for what he's done for them.
And they're knowledgeable of what happened.
Yes, they were volunteers.
And
I don't know how that worked. Like maybe they were shot. They're on their deathbed. You're going to die. Are you willing to try this out? But they chose.
But Agent Stevens was dying of cancer.
Okay. Is that what it was?
Yes. Now, Agent Cameron Klein or Hank, well, I'm just going to assume like the seven issues that he's appeared in Marvel Comics, including Captain America, in which he has five appearances, and Captain America by Jan Jurgens, in which he has two, that, you know, maybe something happened that where he felt like he had to make this, maybe another terminal disease. I'm not sure if in the comics if Cameron Klein has a terminal disease. Thank you, Agent Mark.
Well, Okay, regardless of what it was that caused them to be on their deathbed, they chose to do it. It's not 100% on Coulson here. These are volunteers who are going to die anyway, and were given a second chance. Unfortunately, the second chance involved lots of craziness and insanity and drooling and bad stuff like that.
So, I wonder, how quickly did this progress? Because Coulson was getting ready to release them.
I think it probably started pretty quickly. I think they may have had like long-term maybe success, you know, 3 weeks, a month, 2 months of success, and then it started happening. I don't know, because they were in that, you know, in the guest house or whatever for a long time.
Yeah.
So what else do we find out about Daniel?
Well, Coulson, working with a doctor there at the old guest house,
mm-hmm.
discusses the fact of what they think's occurring, which is they're bonding with the host's DNA.
Genetic memory.
And it's that genetic memory that's driving them to do the carving, that there's a message coming through it. And in good old Sebastian, Eric even talks about it. You know, it wants me to know.
Wait, what did you say?
It wants me to know.
Where did we hear that before?
Coulson.
Coulson? Yeah, this is good. I mean, I'm getting excited. There's not much happening, but these revelations are exciting me, Daniel. And
yes, they should.
Yeah. Well, yeah, as the writers and story runners are hoping it will. But we also find out the alien is thousands of years old.
Older than the pyramids.
Older than the pyramids. So this is new information about the alien.
And it's an alien because they say it like 5,000 times.
Which makes me wonder, well, we'll get to what the map is, quote unquote, the map. If this alien's DNA is giving a map, this map is also thousands of years old. So we could be looking at some Indiana Jones moments coming up.
Well, you should probably save that for later.
Well, that's, I mean, who knows what's going to happen, but okay.
It's
so,
a floating city. And yeah, who knows what's going to happen.
So
it might be in the Himalayas, but soon it'll be on the moon.
If it was in the Himalayas, weren't there like people training karate people in the Himalayas?
Yes.
And also people training magicians in the Himalayas?
Mm-hmm.
Hmm. They could go there. That would be interesting. I mean, Doctor Strange and Iron Fist both have... I mean, not that we have any reason to think Himalayas other than Fantastic Four putting the Inhumans in there, right? But... Well, they could. Okay, so...
It's an exciting thing.
So they're giving names. Coulson is giving names, the new names of the agents as they created new lives for them. And we've had reference to this. Anyone who went through the procedure, we had to erase their memories of the procedure to allow them to not go insane and to survive. This is exciting because it ties into that and makes it make sense. Seeing it like this, Daniel, I feel like, okay, now I understand what they're talking about, that we had to erase their memory for them to survive. They're erasing genetic memory as well.
Yeah, it's not...
The homing pigeon memory, yeah.
Yeah, they literally need to be new people because they have to be overwritten because of this genetic memory piece.
But Coulson was not overwritten. Like they were.
Well, yes, he was. Tahiti.
He was Tahiti, but not to the point where he has a new personality, a new identity, and a new life.
Correct.
These other people were given all of that, and this is why we have, I think, the situation that we're in. Carver and Coulson are kind of aberrations of the treatment. And
well, are we going to discuss why the Carver knows?
Not yet. We're not there yet. Or are we?
I lost track.
Okay. No, we're almost there. But yeah, for Coulson, though, they didn't erase enough. They erased up to the point where he died, but not
what's enough?
Further.
What's enough?
What's enough?
Because
everything.
Everyone. But everyone that was erased is still drawing.
That's true. That's true.
So I don't think there is such a thing as enough.
But they don't have they're drawing without the obsession that Carver and Coulson have. But they
really?
Probably would go there.
She's got a whole room.
Yeah, but she's not she's not living the way Coulson's living. She's able to go out on mm-hmm. dates, you know? She's able to laugh and do, you know, and
she's not drinking because she's happy, Ben. She's not drinking because she's happy.
Yeah, but you have the other guy, too, with his train set. And he has a happy life with his wife and kid. Okay, so anyway, they find out about Carver. He's Sebastian Derek. And they're going to go after him. And Coulson's like, I'm going crazy. Max holding him down. And Skye says, we have to put you into a room. We have to lock you up. And Coulson says, yeah, you're right. You should. And this is where we get our midpoint, turning point. Coulson turns on Skye, throws her in the cell, and goes off on his own because he has to do this. So, yeah, that's our midpoint. We now get Coulson going to this guy's house. This guy has a train set and a kid, and I'm reminded of the Lego movie with the table. And
well,
I'm just a little bit reminded of the Lego movie.
You know, some of them might actually be able to direct the action, though.
So, Carver is coming there. Coulson comes with a gun, draws his gun on the guy. He's like, do you recognize this? And the guy doesn't. The guy hasn't been carving or drawing or painting. He's been building. He's the one guy. He's the key to this whole puzzle. He doesn't know it yet.
Well, Coulson even calls it out as he begin, and when he sees it, it's three-dimensional.
Right. And that's the key. That's the key right there, is that it's three-dimensional, and that's what gets Carver to lose his obsession. Basically, everyone, as soon as they realize what it is, it does not drive them obsessively. It does not possess them. Let's put it that way.
Wouldn't you think that they would then be obsessed with finding the location?
Maybe.
I can't sleep because I got to find this city's location, so that does seem a little odd to me.
So, okay, so this is where you're going to go with Carver. That pain makes you remember. And Carver's been going after these people to remember himself, but also I think there's a little bit of that feeling of, I'm going to help you remember.
Well, and giving Simmons you the pain. Simmons makes the comment that it was the pain that killed our agent here at the beginning. And, like, he kept cutting. And that's what I think, even though he's crazy and he's a psycho and he's an ex-SHIELD assassin, I think he legitimately thinks that if I cut you enough, you're going to remember.
Right.
And so maybe pain isn't working for everyone.
Well, and if you remember, you can tell me. So if I can't make myself remember, I can make you remember.
So he's not necessarily looking to kill you. He just wants you to share the information.
Right. The killing is just a nice little bonus on the side, maybe.
It's a bonus on the side.
Okay, so this is nice, though. This idea of it being 3D plays really nicely into the idea of the carving. You know, Coulson's not just drawing it, he's carving it. And when you're carving into something, you're making a divot. You're creating a 3D artwork. And the same with the guy, is he's cutting himself. You know, he's cutting into himself. They are pushing against their canvas to create somewhat of a 3D art piece. And so I liked the reveal because I feel like since the beginning, with Garrett, I think when they were writing that stuff about him last season, he's carving into the window or whatever. They may not have known this, but I like this little detail of they're carving, not just drawing, and then you have this 3D structure that they look down on, and it's a city. The compulsion is gone. He wants to go to that city now, and then our payoff here is that, you know, May has been apprised of all this that's been going on, but our payoff at the end is that Coulson goes and reveals everything. We don't see him reveal everything because that would be boring because we've already seen the whole episode. But he basically says to everyone, I'm not crazy. I'm not going to go ahead and tell you everything that you just have witnessed, viewers. But I'm going to answer to you guys, and here's a situation. It's a city.
It's a city.
And so, Daniel, are we looking at the home of the Inhumans?
I think so.
Because the home of the Inhumans has moved. You mentioned this.
Yeah, it has moved. It's got, again, it ties to aliens, ties to Kree that go back further than the pyramids. And you could easily MCU Atalan as being a creation of the Kree that at one time had Kree living there. It's, you know, an Atlantis of the Kree on Earth. I my hunch right at the moment says the Blue Man's Kree and the city is Atalan.
Yeah, I'm right there with you, Daniel.
Now, of course, this is a Whedon show, so it's probably not Atalan. It's probably Chicago on a windy day.
or maybe, you know, since it's Whedon, maybe it's Chicago on a calm day.
Or it,
you know,
could be Atalan.
As the city warps back to its original state, and it's not windy. And
it's created by the Kree.
So,
if you want to know why the Cubs don't win, it's because the Kree influence has just been too strong upon the Chicago Cubs over the last 100 years. And that's why the Cubs are unable to win the World Series.
They all have GH325 and
they're all too interested in carving and not interested enough in playing the game.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. So what else do we want to talk about here? We have a little bit of Fitz and Simmons.
I want to talk a lot about Fitz and Mac and Simmons. I gotta back up, my friend. Back it up. So I want to talk about the moment, the interaction between Mac and Simmons. Because okay. Simmons, well, she doesn't like Mac as much as agents don't like the idea of an Aunt May movie, which Sony's now denying. But
she, Aunt May, what?
Exactly. So Fitz makes the comment when they bring in the body. Okay, he makes the comment that Mac, you know, basically told him, you know, you got to seize the opportunity. And then throws the body out there. And Simmons immediately responds with, I always thought it was about hard work.
Yeah.
So she's opposed to what Mac's philosophy on life is. Now, the reason I think she's opposed is because she's losing her influence on Simmons. I mean, Fitz. But it is growing for Mac, the world's best friend.
I think she's less opposed to his philosophy on life and more opposed just to him.
Yeah. So he could have said, Simmons is the nicest person in the room and you would probably get her saying, no, I'm the meanest person.
Or at least, no, Sky is nicer than me.
There you go.
Yeah.
But so Fitz is definitely just locked in with Mac. And so we get that scene there. Now, the scene where he dumps the body, how much stuttering?
Not much. And here's the other thing. He's able to complete thoughts.
Yeah.
You know, Mac is offering suggestions, and Fitz is like, no, this is what I'm saying. You know,
and he's almost like young adult-like in the sense of he's kind of giddy about the fact that he's got a body. He's not scientific about it. He's like, I got a body. I'm going to make a joke.
Yeah. Yeah.
So then, again,
Corpus Diem.
Sticking with the theme of young adult and these two being locked in, Mac is making him play video games. And he straight out says, it's good for your mind and your body to link up. So Mac is using video games as therapy for Fitz. And Mac is like super, super, super concerned that he's working for a crazy man because he didn't know all this back history about Coulson and his memories and being jumbled and that he may be part alien. And he's got concerns. And I'm going to just say this right now. It's Mac. They're good, solid concerns. But Fitz gives him this defense of Coulson, You know, it's not his fault he doesn't have his memories. He's going to get them back. His brain's got a backup for everything. It's like a hard drive. And he's giving this big discussion of how Coulson will be able to regain himself. And then Max, like, boom, you've been talking about yourself, my friend. And that whole conversation, again, how much stuttering?
It's true. Not a lot.
We're on the road to recovery. Now, he may not be the same Fitz he was before, because he does seem a little bit more freewheeling, a little bit more young adultish, a little less sciencey. But I like it. And again, Mac is doing this. I mean, he's almost being therapeutic in the use of video games. I mean, he straight out says it. It's good for your mind and your body to be linked up. Mac is such a good friend.
He is a good friend. He's a very good friend. And he just like has Mac.
Concerns that he's working for a crazy man who might be part alien.
Yeah, well, and he says that in front of Sky. And Sky's like, yeah. Well,
I'm full.
Guess what? So, okay, so Mac, Fitzsimmons, who else is in? Oh, Sky. Poor Sky. But, you know, she's a good friend. She's a good...
You know, hey, every kid one time or another needs to torture their parents.
Yeah, and every kid every once in a while needs to be thrown into a jail cell and put into a soundproof laser wall.
Yeah. I mean, that's... It, you know,
it's just common sense parenting, right?
You know, most parents have to deal with it when that child is in their preteen and teen years. You know, that's when you get your soundproof cell all set up with your opaque hologram wall that no one can see through. And that's when you're prepared for them to, you know, tie you down and, you know, charge you up. But, you know, she didn't have that opportunity as a teen, so she's going to act out now.
Yeah. She's got to make up for lost time. But, no, I like Sky here. This is good. The scenes and the, you know, the SHIELD SUVs, you know, where she's on the bus and she's calling him AC and that kind of thing. Those scenes are paying off now in second season. They paid off last season too, but it's nice to see that relationship and it's nice to see that healing where he has let her in. And so he can be her father figure again and she can, you know, act as that friend and as that daughter. So I'm liking that. I am. Overall, I'm really liking this episode. This was a good episode. Not as exciting as some of the other ones. Definitely a lot of payoff to this episode.
See, I definitely don't think it was as exciting as some of the other ones. Even though, again, this whole award thing should be super exciting. It's a little less exciting when you're strapped to a table. But this is definitely this season the biggest mythology building episode.
Yeah. Well, and it's okay. So, what happens with Ward? Not a lot. Why? I mean, as far as action goes, and why is not a lot of action happening with Ward? That's coming. They're building up to that now.
And he's got a shovel. He's got some gasoline. He's got a newspaper.
we're also seeing him with those first couple of, you know, I'm feeling out your team. You're figuring out what I'm doing. And it's nice. We're going to see payoff to this episode. That's the other cool thing. This episode is setting up some payoff and delivering some payoff. So that's kind of my final thought on this episode is that is just this is about payoff in one way or another. So I liked it. I liked it a lot. I wanted more. I wanted next more week, information. Buddy. But
next week, that's where we get this tag.
We get another episode.
Yep. I mean, this is, what, the third tag in a row we're pulling into the next episode?
Mm-hmm.
Or at least a future episode?
Right, yeah. So, and the next episode stuff looked interesting and fun.
Maybe some more mythology building.
I think we're heading in that direction, for sure.
Because Maximus the Mad's there.
Yeah, Inhumans, man. Listeners, what do you think? Are you even more even more convinced and positive that we're looking at Inhumans here. Do you care about Inhumans?
But I think when you say, do you care about Inhumans, I think that most people that I know who are interested in the superhero movies don't know who Inhumans are. And so let's go back and see what we did with Guardians of the Galaxy when people didn't know who they were. You know, well, we didn't really work them into Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. But we did make sure that they showed up on Ultimate Spider-Man. We did make sure that they showed up on the Avengers cartoon. And you had a really awesome trailer.
Well, and here's the thing. With the Inhumans, it's a civilization. So we've said this before. You could show a few people, a handful, maybe a group of renegades, maybe not. You don't have to show Black Bolt and Medusa.
In fact, you don't show Black Bolt and Medusa.
No, you save that for the movie.
Yeah.
Or for a tag scene at the end of Doctor Strange or something like that.
Yeah, you don't. You do not put them on Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. in season two.
No. But you can show some of their family, and I think that's where we're going. If it's not where we're going, I'm intrigued and interested in finding out what it's going to be. But if it is where we're going, I'm excited that, okay, Inhumans. And I care about Inhumans because I had a comic book with them in them when I was a kid. You know, it really is that simple. I've never been an Inhumans fan, but whenever they show up in a comic book that I'm reading, I'm like, oh yeah, I like those guys. And so seeing them potentially here, I'm just kind of, oh yeah, I like those guys.
I want to like those guys. But, you know, on Ben's 3-point scale, I'm going to give it a 2 right at the moment. So,
well, the funny thing is, the comic book that intrigued me about them is a comic book you didn't really like at all.
No, I didn't say
Fantastic
I didn't.
Four annual.
It's kind of soap opera-y.
Yeah.
So. I really got to figure out what I liked about that.
All right. Well, any final word about this episode before we move on to our listener feedback?
No, I liked it. I think every episode this season's been hitting it.
All right. Well, let's move on then.
Shield Field Report.
Not a lot of feedback today, Daniel.
Well, yeah. There's a few pieces here and there.
And we had possibly asked for some feedback about Big Hero 6, and we didn't really get anything, and that's okay.
Well, there's snow across America. Everyone's frozen up.
Yeah.
And some people are dumbfounded by what's going on with Fantastic Four, so.
I'm not. You can't dumbfound me any more than I already said.
Seriously, we didn't talk about this news story, but the rumor of a Sony Aunt May movie, Sony is now shooting that down.
Yeah. Of course they are. Because that's ridiculous.
Well, here's my real question about that. They're shooting it down, but is it possible that they that they floated that out there to see what the reaction would be?
Well, I could see that. But all right, I got one email here. From Agent Doug. Subject, Civil War movie. Hey guys, when I was watching the audio commentary for Winter Soldier, the directors mentioned that Winter Soldier didn't mean Bucky, but Cap. He was a soldier that endures through the long winter, and they quoted some poem. So I'm thinking they'll pull the same kind of rabbit out of their hat. Civil War isn't going to be Cap versus Iron Man. It's going to be Cap versus Cap, internally. Tony is going to offer some kind of mind fixer contraption. Cap is not going to be cool with that idea at all. Plot twist at the end. Black Widow shows up and wants Tony to mind wipe her for her past. Cap will struggle with the decision after Hydra gets their hands on it and uses it to mind wipe the world's leaders, putting them under Hydra control. But the first person you see it being used on is actually a positive use, making someone forget they killed someone accidentally or something. Curious as to what you guys think. And Agent Doug, there's some interesting ideas there. But I can see what you're saying, that Civil War is a metaphorical description of Captain America's internal struggles. I think that will probably be a part of things, but I also think it's going to be a more literal term of friend versus friend or brother versus brother.
I agree.
Although I could see doing something where maybe while Cap is still Cap, putting Bucky into the Captain America suit and having Cap versus Cap externally as well. But I don't know. I am very curious. I mean, your guess is as good as ours as far as what this movie is going to be like and be about. They announced those titles, not much else. So, yeah, I'm curious what's going to be there. So, Daniel, you have anything for us
on Facebook?
Yeah,
Agent John, the famous John Wilkerson, with all of his voicemails, said, "I need to know," and the answer is, "I'm wearing an Iowa State hoodie sweatshirt and a pair of shorts and socks."
I have no idea what just happened here.
What? Well, I don't know what he needs to know.
This is a Facebook message?
Yeah. Well, he put it on our wall.
Oh.
So, Iowa State hoodie, pair of shorts, socks.
I think you're taking that in the wrong direction, but...
So, something else. Need to know. Can't have my ATM card number. Well, I guess I'll just need to noodle on this some more, won't I?
Yeah. Oh, I see it there. I need to know. Okay.
Yeah. And then Agent Dylan says, calling it right now, map to the mind. If the mind is Atlan, I'd agree with you, Agent Dylan.
Yeah, I think that this episode, it's still a possibility. Maybe a metaphorical city that's a metaphorical map to the mind, but...
No, I'm seriously, it's entirely possible it's not Atlan and that we have plenty of more speculation to go.
I'm curious. The compulsion is gone, but they want to get to that city. That, again, that genetic memory is thousands of years old. So when they get there, it'll be interesting to see what they find. And will it be crashed into the desert or will it be on the moon? I don't know, but... Yeah, okay, well, I think that's our feedback, so I think it's time for us to say goodbye and then talk about Big Hero 6 a little bit. What do you think?
Sounds good to me.
All right. Well, thanks for listening, everyone, and I appreciate the feedback you give us. I appreciate the interaction on Facebook that you give us, facebook.com/welcometolevel7. And honestly, I'm just going to say thanks for listening and leave it at that because I do appreciate you guys. But, Daniel, do you have anything you'd like to say?
Well, after I responded to that John Wilkerson Facebook message, I felt a little concern, a little hesitation in your voice. And I'm concerned other listeners might also have that hesitation. I just want to say, to answer the question on everyone's mind, no, I'm not crazy.
Thank you for listening to Welcome to Level 7. We'd love for you to join the conversation. You can leave us a voicemail at 1-77-55, the word level, and then the number 7. That's 1-775-553-8357. You can also like us on Facebook, facebook.com/welcometolevel7. 7 is spelled out. Follow us on Twitter where we are Level7Pod. 7 is spelled out. Or email us directly, feedback@welcometolevel7.com. 7 is spelled out. Visit our website, welcometolevel7.com, for news, reviews, and links to our RSS feeds. Our theme music is The Light Fantastic by J.S. Earls, jserls.bandcamp.com. And again, thanks for listening. All right, Daniel, Big Hero 6. I talked about this with my kids on the Strangers and Aliens podcast, strangersandaliens.com/Big Hero 6, with 6 being the numeral. But that was me talking with one teenager, one preteen, and two kids. So I think that you could still add some insight.
Oh,
maybe,
thanks.
Daniel.
Thanks a lot. Wow. So, I just need to say this now.
Yes, it.
Spoilers. We're going to say one more thing, but we're going to spoil because something incredibly epic happens in this movie.
Okay. And before we get to the spoilers, before we get to any spoilers, Daniel. You got to say this. What's your biggest piece of advice to people watching this movie?
The biggest, well, should they watch this movie?
A, yes. B, biggest piece of advice. Stay to the end of the credits.
Yeah, you have to. Again, I was in a sold-out theater. There was only two families.
I was in a not sold-out theater, but there were eight people in the theater when it was done, when the it cleared out. Eight people stayed, and five of them were me and my family.
And here's the thing. The reason I'm saying this thing about spoilers is because I want you to go see the end of this movie, and I don't want anyone to ruin it for you.
It's beautiful. It's good. The movie itself is good. I recommend it. Now we're going to talk spoilers.
Okay.
All right. Spoilers. Here be spoilers. Oh. Don't listen any further until you've seen the movie, unless you want to be spoiled.
Because Daniel's just going to straight out say it.
Let's do it, Daniel. Go.
Most epic Stan Lee cameo ever.
Yeah. And here's the thing. You might say to yourself, oh, they could do that because it's animation. Stan Lee could have done that cameo.
He could have.
I noticed it in the picture.
I wear him in the front. I wear him in the – I did too, and one of my kids did too, and I was like tapping on everybody. Stan Lee.
Oh, my son missed it. And then when the credits started, I was like, okay, so Tim, did you see the picture? He's like, no, I didn't see it. And I said, it was to Stan Lee. It was Stan Lee. And then next thing you know, we're in the post-credit scene, and he's talking to the picture. I'm like, look, see, I told you. And my son's like, oh, yeah. And then it happened. Wow.
Wear him in the front. Wear him in the back. Turn him inside out. Oh, it was – and, you know, I wasn't expecting a Stan Lee cameo in this movie. Again, there are Marvel tie-ins. When I saw the picture of the family and knew that was Dad, I said to myself, okay, that was a very, very nice tribute to Stan Lee.
Me too.
But to actually have him voicing himself at the end as a superhero – and being corny, just beautifully corny. I mean, that was – it felt like every Stan Lee cameo that we've had, including the not great ones, all led to this moment because we have the history of the cameo, and then to have that cameo and have it be so good. It was – I want to watch it again just to see the cameo.
Well, I want to watch it again just to see the movie. I mean, that's the thing. The cameo is – the perfect topper for this movie. And I want to analyze the cameo a little bit because it feels like Stan Lee is coming in and being like, you know what? All those heroes you love, and I was a part of that, and I'm going to give this guy a hug. This guy is you, you know?
Overanalyze.
Fred is you. Yeah, I want to overanalyze it, but I want to see the movie too. This movie was just fun. And it was well crafted. It had twists. It had turns. Some that I saw coming. Like I knew Tanaka, or however you would say the brother's name. I knew he was going to die from the beginning because.
Well, they tell you that
Baymax can't belong to anyone else other than Hero.
No, and they told you in the trailers.
In what trailers?
Where they said my brother died?
I don't remember
in
that.
Some of the trailers.
I don't know if I saw that trailer.
Yeah. Well, you only saw one. In some of the trailers, they told you. But here was the – in my house, everyone was convinced that he was the man in the kabuki mask.
I had a couple kids – because obviously you haven't listened to my other podcast, Daniel. But no, yeah, a couple of my kids thought the same thing. And then a couple of my kids thought he's still going to come back.
Now, I thought he was still going to come back.
Did you?
Yeah,
They could have done that, and it wouldn't have felt like a cheat, I don't think.
Now, at a certain point when the man in the kabuki mask was legitimately trying to kill Hero, I was like, this is not his brother. Because he's legitimately trying to kill people.
Yeah, I never thought it was his brother. I never did. But my kids
Well, you're just too cool.
No, I was convinced it was that other guy. Not the professor, but the other guy. I mean, I was just like, oh, well – And then as the storytelling got a little more sophisticated, I thought, oh, they're going somewhere different with this. That's interesting.
So you didn't think it was the professor? You thought it was the millionaire?
Yeah, yeah.
What about his wife?
Whose wife?
Professor, the millionaire, and his wife.
Oh. And the rest.
So, you know, one of the things that I liked about this is I, in my mind, kept comparing it to Meet the Robinsons.
I did too. There's a Meet the Robinsons vibe and definitely an Incredibles vibe.
And I love Meet the Robinsons. But me the too. Whole idea of a sci-fi animated feature, the idea of really learning and advancing in helping society, very, very Disney feels, very, very much something that you found in Meet the Robinsons, something that I expect to see in Tomorrowland.
Yeah, that trailer, by the way. Tomorrowland, it's coming.
Do you know who's directing? Do you know who's directing Tomorrowland?
No, I don't.
Brad Bird.
Is he really?
Yeah.
Maybe I did know that.
And they actually had a game in Disneyland when they were doing some of the filming, because they did some filming in Disneyland for Tomorrowland. But they had a game that was like a virtual game where you did role playing, and they gave you a prize that came out of like out of the ground, and it was that pin.
No way. That's cool.
Yeah.
So anyway, back to Big Hero 6, though. The characters, well-rounded. It was funny. It's goofy in all the right places. It's heartfelt in all the right places.
Hero has an arc.
Definitely has an arc.
He you know, he starts at a very shallow place, and he grows and he learns. We've got our buffoon in Fred.
Yeah.
Is his name Fred? Is it Fred?
It is. I'm pretty sure. Yeah.
But we get our buffoon in Fred, who was voiced by that Miller guy who's in the Transformers movie, who doesn't have as good an ending.
Yeah.
And it was easy for me to relate to Fred and want to like Fred. But I think the big hit here in my house is Baymax.
My kids like Baymax, except for my 13-year-old. He's like, that's the weakest part of the movie for him. I was surprised. But I agree. The thing about Baymax that I like as a sci-fi fan is that this was not an artificial intelligence that gains self-awareness.
Nope.
It is trying to follow through on its programming the whole way through. It's helping Hero to heal. And that's really interesting and really fun.
But it is a learning machine, because it understands it doesn't have all the information it needs to help Hero heal. So it goes and seeks it out.
But you get the impression that if Hero had some sort of weird, weird goiter growing out of his neck or something like that, that it needed more information for, it would seek out weird goiter information in the same way it's trying to seek out this emotional information. And I liked that. I liked that they didn't give it sentience.
Yeah, and I'm with you.
That's cool.
And even when he questions some of the upgrades that Hero does, he questions whether or not it fits within his programming.
And there was one point where it was not allowing him to access the disc. It kind of skirted that. But you still feel like it's part of his programming to say, I'm not going to let you change this in me.
And I will say this. This was, for a Disney movie, that was a scary moment. I mean, that was almost Bambi, the forest is burning, when he's no longer able to access his core programming.
And he's, because of the fact, and he's following the kill order.
Yeah, because as you point out, he's not an AI. So he is following the directions that are coming from that chip. And when that chip no longer has those things like compassion and caring and service, mm-hmm. It's a scary thing, because he really is kind of an unstoppable monster at that point.
Yeah. So he's a tool. I mean, he really is. My kids were talking about how Hero, they didn't like it that Hero didn't have a superpower, you know, like the other ones had. And you had some cool superpowers there, but Baymax was Hero's superpower.
Yeah, even to the point he's hooking on to him. He mm-hmm. can fly because he can hook on.
Right. And yeah, so there was some fun stuff. As a superhero movie in general, an all-ages superhero movie. I really enjoyed it. As that added element of Marvel and some of the little things in there, like the Monarch Starkiller made an appearance. What is that? A one-off issue of Marvel Premiere by Howard Chaykin that I actually reviewed for Comic Book Time Machine, but there's no reason to have that comic book in there, but it was in there. Just these little, nice little additions, and yeah.
You want to hear the real shocker?
What's the real shocker?
Mrs. Butcher didn't want to go.
How'd she feel afterward?
Well, she decided she needed to go because the kids were so excited about it. And, you know, you don't want to be left out of a family event.
Yeah, that's true. Of course, I left out two people in my family, but yeah, anyway.
But, you know, not as caring as me. But loved it. Loved it. And she said that there was no possibility that she would enjoy it. So I think what's important there is this is a movie that non-superhero movie fans can enjoy just based on the storytelling and the characters.
Yeah, I laughed out loud a lot at that movie. And my kids laughed out loud a lot. We got done. We had had fun. I give it the highest of recommendations.
I say you need to go see it. Now, my problem is as you know, I've got this whole library of Disney movies in my head.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, I'm not going to put it in my top five of Disney movies. I will put it in my top one of Disney superhero animated cartoons in the animation line that begins with Snow White. I'm willing to do that.
Which takes out Pixar, is that what you're saying?
Well, no. Yeah, Pixar. Yeah. Yeah. No.
Wait,
yeah,
what?
Pixar's not in that.
You're saying
Pixar's
yeah,
not.
No, yeah.
Yeah, but yeah. Pixar's not in that line. Okay. No. No Incredibles. It's a whole different legacy.
Well, how about sci-fi animated movies?
Oh, much better than Treasure Planet.
I kind of like Treasure Planet.
They tried.
And I vaguely remember liking Atlantis.
They tried it. They tried. I like Meet the Robinsons better, but I love Meet the Robinsons. And part of that is probably an unnatural – nobody else likes this movie, and I really do. So I'm going to just continue to trumpet up how much I like that movie. I'm going to just put it next to John Carter, and I'm going to have a movie marathon of those two. And then on a different day, I'll have a successful movie marathon, and I'll watch Wreck-It Ralph and Big Hero 6.
Those two definitely go hand in hand.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
That's a good, enjoyable night right there. You pop the popcorn. You have yourself a nice cherry Pepsi. You put those two movies back to back. You got a good family night right there.
Yeah. Yeah, it's hard to think of anything that I'm down on. There is some things. It's a mature movie. I mean, it earns the PG. I think it definitely. I'm glad I didn't bring my 4-year old, who just turned 4. I mean, literally today is his birthday. So, just turned 4. It would have been a little too intense for him.
And I had a talk with a coworker who has a child that age in. And I think this goes back to the conversation we had before about know your kids.
Mm-hmm.
When my youngest was that age, that child was watching MCU movies. So Big Hero 6 wouldn't have really been a big deal to him.
We had a family at our theater walk out when the first real dark action started.
The thing is I can believe that because, again, my coworker – her child is the same age, and it's very much anything that seems aggressive, the child does not react well to. And I straight out said, you know what? The bad guy's trying to legitimately kill people. I think if that's something you're nervous about, you and your husband need to go, but yeah. You need to skip it. I mean, the youngest needs to skip it.
You have this really interesting revenge arc here of hero wanted to kill the person who killed his brother. The person who killed his brother is wanting to kill the person who killed his daughter. And in the process of seeking revenge for the person who killed his daughter, kills hero's brother. And so you have this kind of reciprocal.
And it almost shows the futility of trying to seek revenge, because in the end, the reason he's trying to seek revenge is a person he lost that he gets back. But Hero's never going to get his brother back.
Right. Yeah.
And he almost loses Baymax. And so the person who really in this cycle of revenge was getting the most hurt is almost collateral damage, because Hero never did anything to this guy.
No, all Hero did was provide him the ability to really take action on his desire for revenge.
And his brother's consequence was due to I attempted to help you because I cared.
Yeah.
And so the people that were trying to help him, the person seeking revenge, is the one who was hurting all these other good people.
This is where I'm saying this is a rich movie. It's a deep movie. You can look at it deeper. I mean, I'm halfway kidding about, you know, the Stan Lee stuff at the end. But there is a lot.
So good.
There's a lot to get into just with character arcs and character motivations and character choices. And I love that it's all about character choices. And that Baymax, his programming comes from Hero's brother. And so all the stuff that Baymax is trying to do to help Hero is like these remnants of his brother, you know, from, you know, before the grave and beyond the grave to help Hero. There's some really powerful relationship material here. It's just a really good movie. So I'm going to stop giving, you know, glowing about it right now, but.
So here's the problem. If you haven't seen it yet, we've already ruined it for you.
Right.
But you do need to see it.
But this is our conversation about it. So,
and so what I'm hoping is maybe if you hadn't seen it and you're listening to this and you were kind of you might have been on the fence and you decided to go ahead and listen, because I've done that with some of your movie reviews, Ben, is I've said to myself, I don't think I'm going to watch that movie, but I'll listen to Ben talk about it. And so there's been one or two that I've been like, you know what, I should check that out. So if you've gotten this far, you know the big cherry on the top, which is the post-credit scene now. I'm sorry. But you really do need to go see this movie.
Yeah. And if you have seen it and you're listening to this, tell us, what did we get wrong? Did you like it? Did you like it more than it sounds like Daniel liked it? Although Daniel liked it a lot. But would you put it higher in your rankings than maybe he would?
But again, my ranking is based on like 52 movies.
And I'd have to actually sit down and look at the movies to decide if it's top 10, top 5 kind of thing. But we still do want to hear what you thought about the movie.
And it's 52, 53, 54 movies that I like 50 of them, you know.
And then there's Treasure Planet and Atlantis. Oliver and Company, what about that?
I don't mind it, Treasure Planets or Atlantis. Again, just because you're in the bottom half of that list doesn't mean I don't like it.
Yeah.
I mean.
No, I'm talking about the five. What are the five? I'm curious.
Oh, I've done podcasts on that before.
Okay, conversation for another day.
Yeah. I mean, we're talking about things like Peter Pan and Meet the Robinsons. And I mean, at this point, Frozen might be in there.
All right. Well, any final word about Big Hero 6?
Go see it.
All right. Welcome to Level 7 is a proud member of the Noodle Mix Network. Find more of our award-winning and award-nominated podcasts to make you think, laugh, and succeed at noodle.mx. Learn how to podcast, get productive in your personal and professional life, theorize over TV shows like Once Upon a Time, Once Upon a Time in Wonderland, Under the Dome, and of course, Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. Laugh with our clean comedy, delve into science fiction and philosophy, learn critical thinking from movie reviews, and more at noodle.mx.
It's a magical place.